Yes, love is begging door to door, but finds the silence like no one lives there anymore. Rebellious.
Welcome, everyone. The Side Quest, episode 513, a slightly more mellow episode. It's been a couple weeks, but that is okay because we are back from E3. Everything is fantastic. And it's just Steven and I, and maybe Eric will show up at some point. But we sorry for the delay and in between episodes. But as you can imagine, we were kind of tired from the Electronic Entertainment Expo.
The triple, as we call it.
Mm-hmm. That's going to go in the stupid notes of stupid, the triple.
Yeah.
I'm Dolly Domofsky, and you're one of your wonderful hosts. The other host, of course, Steven Strum.
The way you phrased that is kind of incorrect. You said one of your wonderful hosts. What you meant was your wonderful host, because I'm not a wonderful host.
You are just an evil piece of shit.
Oh, no, I'm just like a little ball of just depression right now. Thinking about death on Twitter death. Thinking about what had happened to me if I died. Because you listeners don't know this. Well, you might know this, but you don't know me. That's the problem. You don't know me. You see me. You don't see me. That's the problem. So I live in the ass end of nowhere in North Dakota, which... I phrase it different, kind of poorly, because I live in Fargo, which is the biggest city in the state, which isn't big by international standards, but it's not like I'm living in a 200 person town or anything. And Dally got into an accident.
Yeah.
Between now and E3, and that's part of why
Between E3 and now.
Well, I mean,
between now and E3 would indicate between now and next year's E3.
Domofsky, don't be
forcing me into another accident.
Yeah, don't force me into your linear visions of time. I can see the universe in ways that you never imagined.
These societal preconceived notions about what visions of time needs to be.
You know what you are, Dolly? You're chrononormative.
I'm heterochrono.
You're chronosexual? No. Something else.
That would be awesome. Just have sex across time.
Anyway.
Hold on a second. We totally got to create a website called Chronosexual. Like, which famous historic figures would you fuck?
Yeah. Well, let's be honest.
Abraham Lincoln, okay. Right?
On this website, on this new revolutionary website that we're coming up with, this new social media experiment, if you will. You will get 100 slots for people that you can fuck. But the problem with that is that everyone will just put 100 Benjamin Franklins. Because that guy was a horn dog.
This is the kind of episode that Mike Bachman needs to be on.
Yeah, he could drink a Sprite to fuel his humor. Comedy genius, Mike Brockman.
Oh, my God.
So we were talking about death, right?
Yeah, of course, as we were wanting to do.
Let's bring it back. After that moment of comedy gold, let's bring it back to, like, shrugging off this mortal coil. Mm-hmm. So you got into a car accident.
Yeah, so beginning of last week, I got into a car accident. We believe it. That my vehicle is totaled, but I guess we'll find out whenever the excruciatingly slow process of insurance companies taking over takes place.
Insurance paper.
You gotta get that insurance, Skrilla. But yeah, so we're just waiting to find out. But yeah, I pretty much got sandwiched in between two vehicles.
Okay, I was gonna ask because I heard you got rear-ended, and then you tweeted that picture of your car.
And you're like, that's not the rear end, that's the front end. Yeah, what had happened? What had happened was I was driving home from work, and the ebb and flow of the major expressway, we were ebbing, basically. We had stopped from...
Were you waxing or waning?
I think we were waning. No, we had stopped moving on the expressway, and the vehicle behind me apparently didn't realize that. I thought she wasn't paying attention. I'm not going to insinuate anything, but I'm going to insinuate that she was texting. But I'm not insinuating, I'm stating.
But regardless of the cause, she zigged when she should have zagged.
Yeah, she zigged when she should have zagged. No, regardless of the cause, she wasn't paying attention, and she slams into me. Of course, time slows down when something like this happens.
Well, you were surfing chronosexuals.com.
I was creating. God bless apps on the iPhone to be able to just create a website.
the GoDaddy app.
My sexual partners from the future warned me about that moment. And they said, you have to create this website, else you may get into a car accident on this specific day. And I had forgotten. So here I am on the expressway creating
Specifically, you mean Danica Patrick.
Yeah, Danica Patrick, because she's so fast. No, so we had stopped and... She drove around the world backwards.
Superman was like, I don't know how to do this. And Danica Patrick's like, stand back, Supes. I got it.
I'm a fetus.
I'm sorry. I haven't been born yet. This is 1978. I don't know what... I'm not a NASCAR driver yet. I'm the world's fastest embryo.
The world's fastest embryo. Anyways, so I got rear-ended, and in that split-second moment when I saw the screeching tires and all the white smoke in my rearview mirror from the tires, I decided I'm going to try to, because I was in the far left lane, I thought I'm going to try to turn my wheel to try to get over and minimize the damage and let my foot off the brake a little bit, which helped. Had I not done that, I probably would have gone... things could have gotten worse, but I went flying into the vehicle in front of me. Luckily, we just kind of I clipped her rear quarter panel, and but that totaled my car, just the angle I was at. But I survived.
That is no way to talk about Danica Patrick.
Yeah, I clipped Danica's rear quarter panel. But my car is totaled. The person that hit me went across, her car went across four lanes of traffic into a ditch, took out a sign, because I think she had blacked out at some point. But
Jesus.
But yeah, so I'm alive. But only because people only knew because as soon as I got out of my vehicle, I had to take photographs right away of the car. First, I checked to make sure the person was alive that I bumped into. But right. So then I turned around and started taking photos. But I had accidentally taken an Instagram. I just opened the first app because my phone went flying through the car. I had my phone in the cup holder. I went flying through the car. So I just grabbed.
Wait, literally through the windshield? Or
no, just flying around the car after just bounced around. So I just grabbed the phone and my finger found the Instagram button. So I took an Instagram pic and then that loaded up to Facebook by accident. And I thought, oh, crap. All right. There you go. That's didn't realize that was going to take place that quickly. But yeah.
Sure.
I was standing outside my vehicle when I took that photo, for those that are wondering, obviously.
Yeah. And then immediately took a Vine of it after that.
Yeah, because I said, you know, I might as well take a video because I could capture more images if I take a video. So. And that was that.
Yeah. What kind of car was it?
That hit me?
That you were driving that
got totaled. My wonderful Chevrolet Equinox, super incredibly safe on the inside, though, I gotta say. Every airbag went off, and I felt like I was in Marshmallow Land, so that was good.
Is that a car that you designed the interior?
No,
of?
I did not work on this vehicle. Mm. No.
Real faith in your own product, huh?
I know, right?
Couldn't even buy a car that you designed yourself.
But I
how can I trust a man who can't trust his own work?
But that's it. So I am alive. But Steven and I had a good conversation about you were thinking about what would happen had you been in a horrific car accident. Who would come find you? And I think the resolution was nobody. Nobody would notice you were gone.
as our listeners know, I've got what the medical community likes to call the rickets. It's a vitamin D deficiency from living inside of a basement for the last 22 years. And if I were to be in a car crash, my bones would just they would just crumble into dust. I would not survive. I'm kidding. I don't have rickets. I apologize to all of our listeners with rickets. It's a very serious disease.
The one listener named Ricket.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Ricket, our fan. He did all that beautiful podcast art for us that one time. No, it's cool for me to joke about it though because I'm Scandinavian and that makes it okay because that's mostly affects our people.
Yeah,
it's like how it's Jewish man can make jokes about Jews, like that episode of Seinfeld. So
that one episode
of Seinfeld. With the dentists, you know, anti-dentite. So yeah, I was thinking that got me thinking. Well, this is something I've been thinking about for years, but. It really occurred to me in sort of the it came to the forefront of my brain when this happened to you, because I started thinking about the fact that if I were to die in some horrific accident or of a brain aneurysm or falling in the shower or fucking to death,
chronosexuals.
If I was fucking Benjamin Franklin and I kept going through time so many times, and fucking progressively younger versions of Benjamin Franklin without taking any rest breaks in between, and died, there would be no one would know what had happened to me on the beautiful, beautiful internet. Cause none of the people that I know on the internet around here, know me in a geographically or close to me geographically. And none of the people close to me geographically know these people online. So I presume one of my family or friends would have to tweet from my account, but would they even think of that? I don't know. I don't know if they realize how much of a Twitter, lurker I am. So that so much of my communication is done through Twitter, and so many of the people I know is through Twitter.
Yeah.
Cool. That's crazy. Somebody would post on my Someone Facebook might, probably. Yeah. And then people on my Facebook.
Hey, whatever happened to Steven? I don't know. I haven't seen him in a month.
Well, that kind of, and I was thinking about that again when there was a time when I went to my grandparents for the weekend. I was gone for like 4 days, and like Corey tweeted, like, "What the fuck happened to Steven?" Because I didn't have any internet access over there, so I couldn't tweet. And he's like, "Where is he?" And that made me think about that more. And this story doesn't really go anywhere. It's just, one of my great fears is that, none of you guys will, ever know that I will die and none of you guys will ever know what happened to me.
Well, so. I'm sure we might miss you.
But yeah. I mean, somebody would eventually like open up a case file and like check out my obituary or something.
Possibly.
A short obituary. It'd be a real bummer obituary, I bet. But I need you guys to figure out that I'm dead, because you're the only ones who know that when I'm dead, I want to have my remains shot into a volcano.
Yes.
So that my spirit may return to the mother core of the earth.
So
video games, huh?
Video games. So off the subject of death and onto the subject of dying in games. No.
So we're going straight to The Last of Us, huh?
Straight to The Last of Us. So that's not a bad idea. I've actually been playing games, which is interesting because I rarely do that. But we're starting 7-7, which I should have posted over the weekend, but I got swamped, so I'm going to try.
Yeah, it is kind of. I was wondering about that. It's today. The first of the month.
Yeah. I'm going to post it today. I swear to God, I'm going to post it today. After this podcast is over with, I'll post it. Anyway, so.
Let's not talk about The Last of Us, though, because Eric's not on and he wants to talk about
it. No. All I'm going to say is I've only played the first stanza of The Last of Us, right to the before it flashes to the 20 years in the future.
Oh, really?
Sorry, spoilers, whatever.
First 20 minutes?
It's like the first 20 minutes, which, without getting into any spoilers, that shit rocked me, dude. That rocked me to the core.
I'll bet it did, Mr. I've Got a Daughter.
Yeah, so...
No spoilers, but...
No spoilers, but no, follow back. Team follow back, really.
That is a strong... That game opened strong. Strong like fire.
Yeah, I had to put the controller down and turn the PS3 off because it did affect me quite a bit. And I ran over, hugged my daughter, started playing games with her on the iPad. And that was basically how my Saturday ended. But
traded in for a copy of New Luigi U and just play it with her all weekend.
Yeah, I did pick up New Luigi. Actually, I'm going to write that one down too. Pick New Luigi. But Last of Us, so far, 20 minutes in, so far, so good.
Yeah, strong opening that I...
You've completed it, right?
I have. I solved that game tape.
And overall, what did you think overall?
I mean, again, I want to make sure Eric's here, but like very, very briefly, I'll say that I think that it is thematically probably, and like from a narrative perspective, probably one of the best written and best... Mm-hmm. In terms of storytelling, one of the most polished games I've ever seen in my entire life. I think Neil Druckmann did a fine job writing this plot here, and a lot of people have been having issues, I guess, with the combat in the game. And actually, this isn't a thing that really is a spoiler, and maybe Eric will want to talk about this too. And I don't know how he felt about it, but I actually really really enjoy the combat. I played it on hard,
okay.
which a lot of people say is the best way to play it until you can get to survivor mode, which is like the crazy mode. Mm-hmm. And in hard, you know, I guess they remove a lot of the supplies and things that you find throughout the game that allow you to craft health packs and Molotov cocktails mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So there's a little bit more tension in that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more choice in there. But from the gameplay perspective, and maybe it's because I've been playing so much Dota recently and always every day of my life, I feel like the combat gives you a very specific, very simple set of tools mm-hmm. and then just leaves it up to you to decide how to use those tools. And it becomes very mathematical almost. It's like, I will come up to this guy. I know I have 15 seconds before this patrol comes down here, so I'll choke out this guy. That'll give me enough time to run up these stairs, and that'll take me another 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. And before that other guy turns around, I'll be able to hit this guy with a brick that will immobilize him while I beat this other guy with a pipe, which will allow me to enough time to throw down a smoke bomb, which will make sure that they don't shoot at me, which will allow me to escape. And it becomes like this kind of almost this math problem that sure. I really, really enjoy.
Sure, sure, sure. It's almost like was it the King of Kong where Steve Wiebe is kind of mapping out Donkey Kong and he's mapping out where the jumps need to take place.
Sure,
at one point. Yeah. And kind of saying, I think that's kind of interesting. It's not that it's scripted. The game isn't scripted in that sense necessarily, but I think there is a certain way to play it where you can kind of plan things. You can plan things accordingly.
What works well about the way that shakes out is that, like, and this is another thing I was thinking about, is that the games, so when you play a game like Splinter Cell or Metal mm-hmm. Gear Solid, you feel like you're playing it wrong if you're not getting stealth kills and just being this total deadly shadow all the time. So you feel like you want to restart checkpoints all the time. Because you feel like you are going against like the verisimilitude of that game, that game's fiction has written you in a certain way that you need to feel like, if you're not doing it the way that the game says that you should be doing it, you feel wrong and you feel bad somehow. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In this game, the aesthetic of the sort of plot and world is that you are surviving at whatever costs, no matter what you do. And so very, very early on, I was restarting checkpoints and then made the like decision that felt wrong. And I felt by restarting those checkpoints, I felt exactly how I feel in the game like Dishonored when I don't restart checkpoints. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was playing, it was bad, I was wrong. And so I switched over and made the conscious decision that no matter what situation I was in, no matter how badly I cocked up an encounter, I would see it through to the very end, use whatever was at my disposal. If I came out of it with only a sliver of health left, that was just how the game wanted me to get through it. And I instantly started having 100 times more fun.
Well, it's not even just the fun, because this is something that's been popping up in games a lot lately. And it's one of the reasons I loved Zombie U so much was that you kind of create this different bond to the character that you're playing, because mm-hmm. now you're not just rampaging through, you know, shooting guys at will. You're very much trying to survive as the character, or trying to keep the character from dying. And in this place, Joel, I think his name is Joel.
I don't think they ever give him a second name.
Yeah, you're doing everything you can to keep him alive. I mean, the game really is survival, you know, and it's scavenging, it's survival, it's hunting for supplies and creating and you know, some light crafting, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it really is about creating that character player bond, which is, it's so difficult to make these days, because I think a lot of times games try to do that through the narrative. They'll make the narrative the focus, so as the game unfolds and the plot unfolds, you're kind of making a bond. But I think it's almost more powerful and more gripping when, like, The Last of Us, and I mentioned Zhao Yu to some extent, but in similar games, you know, where you are creating the bond through actions, and I think that's a fantastic way to do it.
Well, and you bring that up, and that's something I would like to point out too, is that the games like Zombie U and Dark Souls and Demon mm-hmm. Souls,
yep.
they handle that in a very, very different way. The way they make sure. You want to make that bond systemically mm-hmm. with your character are very different. So like yeah. in Dark Souls and Zombie U, they literally just give you an incredible punishment or like a systemic punishment for failing. So so you don't want to die because just from a mathematics standpoint, like it doesn't make sense to lose all those souls or lose all that equipment or whatever.
Could you imagine if Last of Us was like that?
Well, that's the thing is that a Last of Us, it provides that same feeling of you absolutely want to survive every single encounter and it feels wrong to not do that. But instead of like forcing you to do that systemically, it forces you to do that emotionally by just presenting you with a world that feels right. It feels right to etch out your survival, to just string yourself along as difficultly as with as much difficulty or at least as the least amount of difficulty as possible, although it often forces you to into situations that are incredibly difficult.
Yep.
But, so that game is crazy, and it's an early game of the year contender, which is interesting because it's the first sort of blockbuster game that's going on my game of the year list so far.
Really? BioShock Infinite didn't go on your game of the year list?
No, I don't think so, and it's weird because BioShock Infinite and Last of Us hit a lot of the same notes with Ellie and Elizabeth, you know, just having this sort of female sidekick at your side
just
all the time.
So people know, my daughter's nickname is Ellie, so that's why Last of Us takes even more of a grip on me. No, I understand. You know, I might as well just get right into BioShock Infinite because that's the other game I've been playing. I finally decided to sit down and just plunk my ass down and complete it, and I did last week, I believe it was. And you know, I enjoyed it, a lot of fun. I still to this day though can't figure out what all the killing, you know, why there was a need for so much killing in the game. And I know people have tried to make a point, all that killing is there for a reason, but I still don't see it. That doesn't capture me. And then the ending to BioShock Infinite, without spoiling anything, you do kind of see that coming quite a ways away. And how it, without trying to reveal anything, how it, you understand why Infinite is in the title, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
It's, I had some issues with it. I thought Columbia was just absolutely wonderful. I thought it was just a fantastic world.
Speaking of the ending, I feel like the themes that run throughout that game kind of hint at where the ending is going. I don't think they specifically say
correct.
I don't think it telegraphs exactly what's going to happen, but or how. But like, you can tell what kind of science fiction this is pretty quickly.
By midway through the game, they've introduced the big hook with the tears, like the way that the tears are utilized, because they actually introduced the tears very early on in the game. Right when you meet Elizabeth, but when it's finally revealed, like midway through, what those are, then you start to see the, things start to align. That if you keep your eyes open, you could definitely pick up those hints.
I mean, just as people who like us spend a lot of time consuming popular fiction, like it becomes a clear certain mechanisms in science fiction and just popular fiction in general become clear to you earlier than maybe the developers intend them, just because you can see, oh, like, okay, they're not going to introduce this concept of these tears and these alternate realities or whatever without eventually paying off on them in some way by the end of it, or close to the end of it at least. So it just becomes, so you know what to expect, but not exactly the hows or whys. And I think the how they handled it was more important than the what they handled.
Yes, agreed.
And as for the killing, I think that's something, and that's something that came to the head. This is kind of getting maybe a little bit into news. I don't think this was on our list, but Irrational had that tweet recently. And listeners, you don't know what we're talking about. We're talking about this tweet where Irrational asked, you know, which side do you go with, the founders or the
Vox Populi
from BioShock Infinite? And the kind of the fight against that, or the kind of mini, not a controversy really, but the kind of like facepalm moment, was that neither side is good.
Right, correct, yeah.
In any way, like one side is a bunch of violent racists and the other one is a bunch of violent revolutionaries. And it's a sort of a thematic issue with the entire game, which is that by making the revolutionaries into like violent, almost cartoon mustache twirly villains by the end of it, they're trying to say like, hey, they're no better than the bad guys were at the beginning, except they're making a blanket statement throughout that narrative of throughout the narrative of that game, making a blanket statement about the nature of revolutions in the world, how anybody who fights back against oppression is automatically just as bad as the oppressors.
Yeah, freedom fighters aren't necessarily a good thing, according to the developers. Yeah, well, I don't think
if it was just them saying like aren't necessarily a good thing, I don't think people would have much of a problem with it, but they're it feels more like they're flat out saying freedom fighting isn't a good thing, or at least not in a violent way. And maybe they meant only that violence isn't the answer and that you should find nonviolent approaches, but they never, but that's, you know, filling in gaps that they leave themselves. Like they at no point is there any indication that they never make any kind of statement on pacifism or, you know, sort of neutrality and passive resistance. And that is sort of where the violence in Bioshock Infinite kind of falls apart. I think too many people got bogged down with the idea of, oh, it's a video game, so you're killing people, and that's dumb. Like, I don't think that violence by itself is dumb. I think the context for the violence outside of the main character being a violent person is what makes it a problem, because by the end of that game, you're fighting almost entirely Vox Populi, and they shouldn't be the sort of supervillains that they become within the context of that game.
Of how quickly they become those supervillains, yeah.
Right, they go from, like, fighting against racism and slavery to attempted child murder.
Exactly, and they that switch flips very quickly, and you don't communicate at all with the Vox Populi throughout. Really,
even then, you're under duress, and they're inflicting violence upon you. There's never any moment where the Vox Populi feel like they start off as good people.
Right. But I'm sure he's getting hooked up. Yeah, he says, "Hey guys." I enjoyed Bioshock Infinite. I didn't love it. I realized I didn't love it as much as the first Bioshock. I thought that the twist in that first Bioshock at the end was fantastic. I did like the ending sequence of Bioshock Infinite before the kind of ending narrative sequence. The last, I guess you could say, the last battle area. And
the climax before the revolution.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was really well done. There are still issues with a few issues I had with the game, but nothing that's game breaking. Just questions that I thought could have been cleared up a little bit more.
How about those ghost fights?
Oh my gosh, yeah, there were some that was kind of bizarre. It's not a ghost.
Whatever they were just from a gameplay standpoint. However you feel about the story aspect, those boss fights were terrible.
Oh yeah. It was an unneeded way to approach that character, I guess you could say. But regardless, it's still a fantastic game, and it looks like we're going to get an announcement on the first real set of Season Pass DLC at the end of this month. I threw a huge hissy fit a couple weeks ago, or last week, I think, I was actually wondering about that Season Pass, because I thought I would have been pissed off if I had purchased the Season Pass and still hadn't received any notification of when that was going to show up. And I really warn against... As a consumer advocate, I warn against people throwing money blindly at something without getting any date as to the arrival of it. Yeah, we know all the DLC is supposed to come before March 2014, but that's the only information we got.
The issue with season passes for me is less to do with when they're coming, because generally speaking, this is 2K we're talking about, so they're probably going to make good on promises.
Yep.
My problem with the season passes, and we don't need to get into this, but I just wanted to say that my problem with season passes, and something that Borderlands 2 has really highlighted, is that you don't know if what you're getting is going to be any good, or even if it's anything that you want. So like that, each piece of content could be, unless they specifically state ahead of time what kind of content you're getting down the line, which they rarely do, that extra content could be a bunch of character skins, and
maybe which is what happened in Uncharted 3 had. Hey, we're gonna give you a multiplayer map or give you some character skins. It's like, well,
I don't think Uncharted 3 had a season pass.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm sorry. So some game had that.
There have definitely been games that did that. I think, and Borderlands 2 had some very mediocre DLC. Which Borderlands 1 had some pretty mediocre DLC.
So. Yeah, it's the season pass stuff. Without knowing what's coming, it's very difficult to. To throw money at stuff, and I'm confident that 2K will release some great stuff, but at the same time it's or at least will create stuff that's got a good value. At the same time, I'm just season pass is I need to know up front what I'm going to be getting, and I like that for I think that just to kind of close it from my end, the Forza game season pass for both Forzas that have had it, Forza 4 and Forza Horizon. Was fantastic because you knew I'm getting cars every month. And that's basically all you needed to know, and you're going to get new cars. You know what kind of cars you're going to get. You're going to get cool cars. I think the
automotive. Did they really say what kind of cars?
They don't say it. They don't say it ahead of time, but you know you're going to get a mix of supercars, classic cars, and so forth.
As long as they provide some basic details that, that's fine. You see, I'm okay with that because then maybe you don't know the exact nature of what's coming, or if you don't know the exact details on what's coming, but as long as you know the nature of what's coming, if they come out and say, like, you're going to get cars, and you're going to have a mix of these kind of cars, and these kind of cars. We're not going to tell you what kind of cars,
because
we haven't figured it out yet, but if you want cars, pay your money now, because if you're planning on buying cars, that's fine, but it's when they say, like, we're going to have four pieces of content, it's like, what are they? Well, we're not saying that yet. Well, then don't ask me for money. At least with like a Kickstarter or something like that, they won't necessarily fulfill their promise in terms of quality and final vision and stuff like that, but they have to pitch you on the basic concept of what they're providing.
And I know part of the 2K tends to be very Take Two in general tends to be very secretive about the content of their games and about their DLC and that kind of. I mean, look at what's happened with Grand Theft Auto 5. I mean, you will not hear a peep out of that company as to, they're very controlling as to what information gets out. And I think they're the same way with BioShock, and it has been with BioShock Infinite and so forth. But it's one of those things where I would almost welcome Season Pass DLC if right away it said you're going to get 5 multiplayer maps. Well, then you know what you're getting for a Season Pass DLC, even if it's just that or whatever. Or if it says you're going to get 4 narratives and 2 multiplayer maps, you need to know that kind of going ahead of time, but you don't,
Yeah, I mean, there's no promise that they're going to be any good, but as long as you know, like, if you can tell yourself, okay, I'm the kind of person who is going to buy all of the multiplayer maps for Call of Duty no matter what, that's fine.
Yep. Hey, Eric. How's it going, Eric?
Yeah, so...
Pretty good. I finally made it in.
He made it in.
This is our friend Eric Smith. He is... I don't know if he is... Dale, you're the wonderful host. I'm the ball of depression host. Yeah, Eric, what kind of host are you?
The beautiful host.
The beautifully bearded
beautiful
host.
Beautiful host. Oh,
yeah, my beard is getting thick.
I do juicy. See twinkling. Did you bedazzle your beard?
Right here.
He beer dazzled that.
Right there? Okay. Here,
beer dazzled that. Beer dazzled.
Right here, the perfect description for people listening to a podcast.
Three inches south of the nose.
Whoa, look out, Steven. We're a family show.
Three inches south of the nose?
3 inches south of the nose.
I know that the internet will make anything prurient, but
Rule
like
34,
that,
bro.
But I'm pretty sure that is the exception that proves the rule 34 is I don't think anybody thinks beards.
No, Mr. Rogers is the quintessential rule 34 prover.
So we're just talking a little bit about what we've been playing, Eric. We touched briefly on BioShock Infinite and Last of Us.
Yeah, I caught the end of your discussion there on BioShock and
I finally completed BioShock. I know you had tweets from like 3 months ago, 4 months ago. No, I was mentioning that I liked it. I like BioShock. I had some issues here and there with some of the plot and some of the narrative and the way the way violence was approached and stuff. But overall, I enjoyed it. I still believe BioShock 1, the kind of the mechanic and the initial feeling of Bioshock 1 when you see the big daddies for the first time, nothing beats that. Bioshock 2, I felt, was actually a more complete game from start to finish, with a more cohesive narrative.
That,
but
that seems to be the side questing general opinion.
Yeah. And, like, how often are we, like, not on the same page
every time?
And then when we are on the same page, it is in, like, universal disagreement with the rest of the internet.
We talked a little bit, just briefly, about Last of Us, only because it just released, and I've played just that first act, and I was telling Steven how hard that hit me.
That makes some amount of sense.
I told Steven, I put my controller down, hugged my daughter, and played Elmo games the rest of
the time. It's crazy the reaction that's getting from everyone. I remember watching the IGN piece where Seth Rogen played it, and he almost broke down in tears when that happened. And the guy sitting next to him on the couch, like, I thought this was going to be a funny game.
Well, he was specifically talking about the German film Funny Games. Exactly. He thought it was going to be thematically similar.
So you've played it, I take it.
I played it in span of about 36 hours.
You just kind of played it nonstop?
Yeah, I played it one night, and then it was a Saturday night, then all of Sunday.
So basically the Saturday and Sunday right after it launched, essentially.
No, it was the week after.
Okay, actually, last weekend then, essentially, right? Or the weekend before, okay.
Weekend before, yes.
Very cool, very cool. And you liked it?
Yeah, it's a good game. I think... It's the most unpopular opinion in the world because, you know, it's like it's got a 950 on Metacritic or whatever.
Whatever crazy thing,
Out of 10. And I think it ends terribly. Steven and I had discussion about this.
We had DM discussions about this. Yes. As the side questing crew is wont to do. I don't think we can really talk about it without doing like a full-on spoiler cast.
You guys should do a spoiler cast. You should do a random battle. We haven't done one in like a year, but we should do it on Last of Us for sure.
Yeah, we talked about that too, and I don't know. It's somehow, Uncharted 3 than Uncharted 2.
Well, somehow I feel that if me and Eric did a spoiler cast about this game, it would just become like a debate on our political views. That's just like... It would be like red state, blue state, like just levels of madness. And I mean, literally, we would start talking because I have certain theories about how it ties into our differing political views.
Sure, sure.
Well, yeah, and I live in a red state, and you live in a blue state.
I don't know what state. I don't know what the colors are,
Steven.
Oh, okay.
The way you said it though made it sound like it was that way. But yeah,
I live in Kevin Smith's red state.
Kevin,
you actually live next to the farmhouse.
Well, their farmhouse encompasses their plot of land encompasses my city of Fargo.
Oh, so you were one of the people playing the really loud notes at the end of the movie, making him think that God was coming.
Well, you see, John Goodman is, as our listeners know, is a blood relative. when Kevin Smith approached him for asking where they should film the movie, he of course said, "Well, we got to go to Fargo. They got wood chippers. I hear they do great things with wood chippers in movies in that town."
Yeah, that's a good goddamn movie. People should watch that.
Yeah, Red State? See that.
Yeah,
Red State.
It's on Netflix Instant.
Let's move on to happier gaming.
I played another game.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
This is coming out when? Or are you going to release this tomorrow or Wednesday?
This will probably go up tomorrow.
Okay, never mind then.
I know what you're talking about.
I played...
Yes, blip, blap, bleep, blap, bleep.
I played like 8 hours of Saints Row 4. Okay. God, guys.
Okay. I know. Just read the preview.
Read
the preview. Okay. Let's move on to...
I should mention... I will say stuff that is absolute fact that is okay for me to say.
Okay.
I played for about 8 hours, and it's only about an hour and a half preview.
Okay. He had horrible installation issues. They sent him floppy disks.
Oh, man.
Well, he asked how long the game was, and they said, "Well, it depends on if we put it on 3.5-inch floppies or
Betamax or cassette tape."
That's a home runner.
Cassette
tape
for Commodore. Animal Crossing. I'm trying to move us along as fast as
Animal Crossing.
So. I've been playing it. Steven's been looking at it. Eric, do you have Animal Crossing?
Nope. No. I played my fill of Animal Crossing on GameCube and DS.
Do you have a 3DS, Eric?
What's that?
Do you even have a 3DS?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is my first real Animal Crossing. I had, Wild World, the DS version? And I played it for all of about 20 minutes and said, fuck this shit. I don't like building houses, and I gave up on it. I wasn't into The Sims. It just wasn't me. So I held off. I never played the GameCube version or the Wii version. Just nothing interested me. And then I decided, you know what, I'm going to give this one a shot. It seemed like there were some cool new ideas, like being the mayor of the town and some of the street pass stuff and actual online stuff. And I'm really fucking addicted to it. I am. I cannot stop trying to get bells, which is the currency in game. It's like I just caught a fucking whale shark, guys. I caught a whale shark, and that was like 100,000 bells right there, or some crazy number. You know,
I don't know.
Like 20,000 bells right there.
We were talking about all of us agreeing on Bioshock 2 being the big revelation of this episode. Mm-hmm. Really, I think the real revelation here is that Dally likes a Nintendo game. I think that is the most shocking thing
here. I can't believe you haven't played one before.
I just never did. It never interested me. So I like this a lot. I'm not. This isn't like a, you know, this game's not going to change worlds or anything. It's just another addicting game that this company knows how to put out. But I think it's a the kind of fever I'm seeing around Animal Crossing is like what you saw the game journalists get into with Persona 4 Golden, but multiplied, I think multiplied to like by 10, because you're getting a lot of people that aren't into hardcore RPGs playing this game. So, and it's really all it is just like The Sims, like a really cute version of The Sims, you guys, but at least there's just furries. That's basically all it is. But I don't know
what
it is.
You needed. That was your end.
I guess so. I don't know what it is. I like throwing down city ordinances and building, you know, building campfires and buildings and shit. It's just something really simple. And I think the only reason I think I'm really addicted to it is because I bought it as a download. If I had bought it as a cartridge, I probably wouldn't be playing it all that often. But I got it as a download. I think it's a really good game to have as a download, because you can pop it open, do your duty for like 20, 30 minutes of your day, 15, 20 minutes of your day, and then you're done. So it's like a really long bathroom break for me at the office. Just go to the bathroom, get my bells for the day, set my ordinance, and I'm done. So
okay. The problem I have with the new game, it isn't even really a problem with the game. It's the fact that I can't keep up with the schedule of an Animal Crossing.
Oh, change the time. You don't have to do that? Yeah,
but then what are you even playing?
Yeah,
I mean, it's like part of the game is keeping with a schedule like you would in real life.
It's not until you've saved up enough money to some of the night things that open up, some of the evening events and things that start opening up, that the game really becomes a 24-hour experience. I think the island, though, if you guys go to the vacation island, that's open 24 hours, which is kind of cool. But no, I totally agree.
Isn't that like a cheat island, though? Can't you like get infinite bells there?
It's not infinite bells, but that's where you can get. That's where I land all my big bells. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
big bells,
baby.
Why don't you guys just sit back for a second? And let Dr. Strum provide you or prescribe you a description of Animal Crossing New Leaf.
All right.
As someone who has never ever touched an Animal Crossing game. Never played one, never looked at one, never even considered one.
Basically me as well, yeah.
Yeah, well, you had some experience in Wild World. You probably knew a little bit more about it. Yeah, I had no idea what these games are about. I literally just downloaded because people were talking about it.
Man.
Fucking peer pressure, Steven.
No, that's exactly what it was.
Steven, why don't you try smoking the cigarette?
Hey, Steven. I'm not going to say
that. Yeah, yeah, well, did you have the conclusion of that?
No. Oh,
okay.
Not a clean one.
All right, thanks, man. That's cool. So I get on my train with that cat, and I name and I name my town of Inaba, and I rolled into
seriously.
I'm on a train and I'm headed to a city. I'm gonna name it Inaba.
Good job, Steven.
First off, that's the bullshit thing with this game is I had to go through like eight different naming conventions because you can only have eight. Letters that or whatever six letters that you can use to name your town, which is bullshit. Okay, so one strike there. I guess belief.
It's a Nintendo game. Strike two.
Yeah. Miyamoto was involved in some way with this game, promoting it or something. So that's strike two right there. So I get off the train and I get off and I go see the, all the people and they say like, I see the
get off
and
the
I
train
get off.
And get off.
Exactly. Get off.
And they say, oh, you're the mayor and stuff. Cause they're dumb fucking animals. They don't know shit. They just assume that I'm the mayor. So they're like, okay, you can come and live in our town. Here's a
here, rule
tent.
Us.
here, rule us with your human fist. Lord and Master, you are more evolved than we could ever hope to be. Now go live in this fucking shanty town given to you by this smug bastard Tom Nook. So that's two strikes because these animals are dumb. And
did you see the quote that came out on Nintendo saying how Tom Nook's supposed to be a nice guy?
That guy's running a racket. That guy's running.
Yeah, that guy has been robbing me blind for a decade now.
And I keep hearing people telling me about the Mr. Rossettis and the
fuck
Tom
you pay me.
Fuck you pay me. And the fuck you pay me's. The pay me the don't ray me from Tom Nook and Mr. Rossetti and like cherries and fruit and fishing and stuff like that. And I gotta tell you guys, I put maybe 2, 3, 4 hours into this game and I don't know what the fuck I'm supposed to be doing. I have literally no idea.
That sounds accurate, yeah.
I shook a tree.
Yeah. You shook a tree?
Yes, I shook a tree. I don't know. That's my entire 3 to 4 hours. I shook some trees. I dug up some fossils. I gave them to that stupid owl. He's only awake during
Blathers.
The night. Blathers. Blathers?
Yeah, Blathers, yeah.
Blathers.
Did you buy this game like the day before it went on sale at Amazon for like $25?
Like 4 days before. Okay.
You downloaded this game, didn't you?
I downloaded.
Oh, Steve.
How much is it? 40?
Yeah.
$40.
$36.
Download it.
$35.
God, Nintendo gouging you for the same game from 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, well, that's what happens when your chief economic advisor is Tom Nook. and head of HR is Mr. Rossetti. So that's
here's the crazy thing. That was my very first experience with Animal Crossing, like 7 or 8 years ago, 10 years ago, whenever it was in the DS. And I said, "Fuck this shit, I'm done." And I would strongly suggest, even had you bought the cartridge, I would have said, get rid of it, you know, but it's too late now. You're kind of stuck. But I have now received here's the level of fever, I guess you could call it, the fervent amount of people that are playing this game. I've received more street passes over the last 2 weeks from Animal Crossing folks just out of the blue than I have from almost anybody over like the month before E3, which was pretty crazy. I've never seen that many people pick up. I mean, this is essentially a system seller for the 3DS, because I know a lot of people that picked up the 3DS specifically for Animal Crossing, which is bizarre to me. There are great games on this thing, and Animal Crossing is a fucking thing that people do.
No, it's that it sells to people who love Animal Crossing. There are people who love Animal Crossing that just don't like video games. Like, there are people...
Sure.
That don't play, like, don't buy systems. It's like people's significant others, you
it's
know,
like brain age, that and, brain age stuff. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, sure. It's people who own 3DSs who their kids and their girlfriends and their boyfriends that are buying or are wanting Animal Crossing because they see them playing it and stuff like that. And those are the kinds of people. It's like, oh yeah, I remember the GameCube game. I played the shit out of that. We should play this together. So, I mean, if you listen to podcasts and stuff, mm-hmm. I mean, it's all anecdotal, but that's almost a universal story that I keep mm-hmm. hearing everywhere about this game. But I seriously, I just don't know what the why. What is like the end nothing, game?
It's nothing. It's just a persistent. Just a persistent world. Just run the world. That's it. Just walk around and use your shovel and dig up fossils. That's all you do for the entire game.
There's like 10 different things to do in the entire game.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and it can be fun.
Yeah, depending on...
It can be fun, but...
Well, I mean, one of my big problem with it, problems with it, I guess, and it ties back into point number two, is that, like, strike number two, I mean, is that... So I played Persona... I go to the real Inaba, the only Inaba, the true Inaba, and I forge these bonds, right? Forge these relationships. I meet Chie, and Chie is the best, and Nato is awesome, and Kanji is great, and all that stuff. And they have cool problems, and they are interesting characters to learn about and to deal with. And I'm talking to these animals, and they're just fucking stupid. They're just a bunch of like dumb bastards that don't know shit about anything. They're just like, it's like, oh yeah, hey mayor of Inaba, that we just I decided that you were going to be our god. Hey, why don't you come over to my house and we will talk about how great the weather is or some shit. It's like
Steven wants problems. Like some massive sprawling narrative. You want like a Columbia level narrative in Animal Crossing.
I want to know.
But hey, counterpoint. You can totally get one of those villagers to say suck your dick.
That's true. Really? That's true. Yeah.
I see. I've been seeing those tweets sent out too.
Okay. I don't know if that's true because isn't there a filter in this one?
To an extent.
It definitely filtered out some of my choices for town names.
Yeah.
Can you still set like a.
Santorum is not allowed to be a town name.
Mm-hmm. Like a theme, music theme?
Yes. Yep. You can change the theme. You could change the.
Yeah, but can like you like upload your own music?
That I don't know. I have no idea about that.
I know you can definitely upload your own photos because Reggie Fee's maid's entire bedroom
in Animal Crossing is fucking hilarious.
His own face.
Maybe that's what Don Matrick tried to do. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that.
Oh yeah, but he tried to play it on his Zune and he just didn't understand.
But this game is just Animal Crossing. There's really not much to it. It's really kind of plain, but it's just one of those addicting things that everybody's getting on. It's going to keep the 3DS afloat, for a while now. I have a feeling it's going to be huge again around the holidays. Animal Crossing will be.
Whatever. I mean,
maybe there should be something else out by then.
Well, Shin Megami Tensei 4 comes out in 2 weeks, so I mean, that's the only game I'm ever going to need on my 3DS.
What's interesting about Animal Crossing is that, again, it's the kind of game that back in the Nintendo Power days with the GameCube version, and the reason that I mean, one of the reasons I never picked up the GameCube version was because I didn't want a game that I had to come back to every single day. But there's always these daily events taking place, and there's festivals, and there's special visitors and stuff that force people to keep wanting to come back to the games. And it's like it was freemium before there was freemium, you know?
Well, except
it was freemium that you had to pay for.
Exactly.
Yeah. And if I can't be, if I'm not helping high school kids with the understanding their own sexuality.
You better tread carefully around this one.
Yeah, exactly.
If I can't help high school kids come to terms with their sexuality
and video games,
okay, that is totally a thing that happens in Persona. So
yeah,
proceed.
Yeah. Persona 4. Their gender identity, their sexuality, their love of beef. Is there an Animal Crossing character that just really loves beef? Like, because maybe that's my in.
There might be. There's a workout guy that I have in my town called Harry the Hippo that calls me beach bum all the time, and he likes to work out. So I've actually bought him some workout gear, and I'm sure he likes burgers.
So are some of the animals and stuff actually interesting to talk to? Do they have fun or funny things to say, or is it really just going to be like, "Oh, hey, mayor, it's really a nice day out. It's cool to have you in a town now. Thanks."
I think they all have their quirks in certain ways. Like I know I have a character named Blue Bear in my town that is like secretly in love with one of the other animals, which is bizarre because they'll avoid them. throughout. They're like, they won't. He doesn't want to be in the same place as the other one because he's afraid he'll say something wrong. And so I purposely. So
apparently this is a game made for 3-year olds.
Exactly, which is why I'm loving it. No, so I'm purposely sending him letters with secret messages from the other character. But regardless, anyways,
pretending.
Well, at least that's something.
You're secretly in love.
Yeah. So that's Animal Crossing. It's.
Have you guys talked about the Swapper yet?
No, we haven't.
Go ahead.
We
need you to guys talk about that. Right now.
We played that game to completion since last podcast, I think.
Yeah. Did we talk about it at all last podcast?
Go ahead. Talk. No, you didn't. No, because that was before E3.
The only thing I really want to say about the game is what Reggie said. Play the game.
Play the game.
Play the game.
Yeah, because it's if not my favorite, like in my top three of the year, it's fantastic.
Hmm.
I've
heard that a few times.
In your top three.
What, Steven?
You're saying it is in your top three.
Yes, at least in my top three.
Yeah. I think it was Justin McElroy was asking, what are your top five games of this year? Swapper was my number one. Like, holy hell, Swapper. Mm-hmm. It is, so for, just for a base, I don't want to spoil too much, but for a basic breakdown for the listeners who are hearing of this, it's a independently developed sort of puzzle platformer, but rather than exhibiting the telltale sign of that, which is pixel art graphics done in this faux retro 16-bit, but not really 16-bit style, it is done entirely in like found objects that have been rotoscoped into the game. So it's like claymation and stop motion animation, but incredibly, incredibly smooth. Mm-hmm. Because they've just been mapped as textures in the game. And it is about, I don't want to give too much away about the setting or anything, but the basic concept of the game is that you're this character who has a device called the Swapper, which allows you to clone yourself up to 4 times and then jump your consciousness between those different clones. And
you control all of the clones at once.
Right.
With the same controls. It's not like you... WASD essentially controls all 4 characters at once.
Hmm. Yeah, they all move around the screen in the same way, but in different positions based on where you place them.
Yes.
And then you use that to solve puzzles, you know, move
basic switches and things. It's the best puzzle game I've played since the original Portal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And it did... In 4 hours, what I felt Last of Us couldn't do in the entire 15-hour experience, which was make me feel in control without having any kind of control at all.
Until the very, very end.
Yes. And then it's still not even, it's pointless.
Hmm.
Yeah, the ending of that, which, we don't want to like spoil the game, but the ending of the game is, plays
it's
on...
It's tragic.
It is. It's crazy. Hmm.
We'll just say, because there's a binary choice at the end, mm-hmm. which everyone knows about, I think, that's heard of this game. And I sat pondering the choice for a solid minute, at least. And I instantly regretted my choice when I made it.
After this podcast, I need to tell you what happens at the end of the other ending.
Well, I watched the other one on...
Oh, you did?
YouTube.
So I chose... this rarely happens, I feel like, just in video games in general, because I think most people generally like to pick the same things because a lot of games sort of lend themselves to making you think a certain way about the choices and the implications of those choices in the game. But me and Eric actually, just by random happenstance, happened to pick the two completely different endings. And I did the same thing as him. I watched the other ending on YouTube. And both are equally as... tragic, and both are equally as affecting, mm-hmm. but they both have such very, like, such incredibly different implications for, like, the philosophy of the game.
It tells a lot about you which one you choose.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Is there a Mac version of this?
Probably not. It's made by 2 dudes.
They're, like, Finnish developers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I give it the rest of the year, it'll probably be out on iOS or something.
Sure.
Or Vita or something, you know.
I've heard a lot of people say it is not possible to play with a controller, and those people are high on dust. The controls are not difficult.
Oh, you played it with a controller?
No, but I mean, as I'm playing through, I'm like, this is like basically a twin stick game if you were to put it on a controller.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, no, absolutely.
I don't know. I question people's ability to think about two things at once.
If they can't play this. You would definitely get a greater sense of control over controller with a mouse, I think, just in the way that you place your clones. But I think, especially the way, so when you're placing a clone in the game, it actually slows down time to a crawl and allows you to kind of place it wherever you want, even if you're in the middle of falling.
So you can like jump and hit the button to slow yourself down.
Yeah. And then kind of maybe shoot your consciousness into that clone, and then you can kind of jump around a platform that way. And I think that concession alone makes it probably work, would probably make it work perfectly fine, even in the more twitchy sections on a controller.
Yeah.
Just that alone. And it already kind of, it's not like you need like a mouse cursor to like give you kind of any indication of where the clone is going to be, because it gives you, whenever you're laying a clone, it gives you an outline of that clone and exactly where it's going to pop up when you fire it off out of your swapper device. So.
Yeah, but there's there's no real mechanics to give away. It's you swap, and there's like different colored lights that limit your ability to swap and make clones. Like blue light, you can't make clones in, I think.
Yeah.
And red light, you can't shoot your swapper gun through. So
you can't puzzles, swap your consciousness.
Yeah, puzzles revolve around like that, basically.
That's actually my only problem with the game is that towards the end of the game, especially the last couple of puzzles, they kind of force a lot of that environmental stuff on you a little too hard, whereas I think they could have just focused on making you learn new and unique ways of using your gun. And it's not a gun really, but in using the swapper.
It is almost a exact analog to the portal gun.
Yeah. I mean, even down to the fact that, you know, there's the two-color system, you know, the red light, blue light kind of thing.
Yeah.
The game, early on, it is one of the greatest strengths of the game, and maybe why it bothers me so much that it falls apart later on, is that the game does a great job of, it tells you exactly what you can do with advice, which is you can place clones, and you can shoot your consciousness, and then it just creates environments that sort of trick you into learning how to sort of platform around by yourself. It never says to you specifically these different sort of tricks that you can use it for, but it puts you into situations where the solution becomes obvious to you actually tutorializing it.
It's not like it becomes obvious. It's easy to figure out, and it'll make you feel smart while you're doing it.
Like
the original Portal.
That's a better way of saying it. Yeah, it's like that. It's that now you're thinking with portals moment. Like, it's like, oh, shit, I get it. And later on, I feel like it's almost kind of a video gamey kind of cheat that they just kind of make. Like, okay, here's this giant obstacle course. You don't really need to learn any new ways of using your device. You just have to sort of figure out what order to do all that shit that you've already learned how to do. It stops giving you new things to figure out and just says like, okay, use all that stuff you've already figured out and get through this sort of jungle gym. And it feels a little arbitrary. I mean, and I guess it's a puzzle game, so it kind of, at the end of the day, like, I mean,
it
is arbitrary. Yeah. But that being said, also the game is incredibly, the atmosphere of the game is incredibly, incredibly affecting.
Great music.
Yes.
Like the pulled out, It is a 2D platformer, but it is like pulled out in a weird way that it's hard to explain. But I was just taking screenshots constantly. I'm like, God, I want to see a picture of this, and it's the design of it is just incredible.
Sort of stop motion animation found object look of the game adds this weird sort of uncanny valley to everything where. You know that none of it is real and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, like at the beginning of the game, you fly away in like a little escape pod that is clearly like a painted like can of beans or soup can or whatever.
Yeah, it's a tin can.
Yeah, it's a tin can, but the fact that the textures are all real textures, like they're real life things, adds this sort of uncanny valley level to things where it's like, okay, I'm passing past this asteroid, but this asteroid is clearly made of like charcoal from a grill or something like that. And that, but the game is already kind of creepy because of the music and the sort of, and I mentioned this in my, I reviewed it actually, and I mentioned this in the review, is that it's, there are moments that feel, that sort of remind me of the time when I first played Myst on like PC, which was like, in Myst there are never any enemies and hardly ever even any other characters that exist in that game alongside you, but you still, or at least for me personally, I felt constantly like there was something over just waiting around the next corner that was going to just rip me apart because it was so quiet and so isolated. And
it was
that,
haunting.
Yeah, yeah. And this does that, except it has that uncanny valley of like, these are real textures. This this feels sort of like magic realism. Like, I know that this is all just, this perspective on everything is warped because that's a tin can spaceship and my guy is like the size of a, is smaller than a tin can and all that stuff. But having those textures be like practical effects, for lack of a better, you know, video game term, and instead of CGI, is kind of, it kind of adds to that. It adds a another layer to that kind of creepy onion, that the music and the sound and the silence and the isolation already had.
Yeah, it's I can't recommend that game enough, especially for like what, 10, 15 bucks, whatever it is.
It's $9.99, I think, on Steam.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's great. It's one of the best games I've played in a while.
It is actually $15, but I got it. I mean, it was on sale for a while for like $12. If you don't own it already,
screw you for not getting it already.
Yeah, you dumbo. What are you doing? Are you an Animal Crossing character? Yeah. So that is, I gave it a 5 out of 5. You can read the review on the site. Easily my game of the year thus far. We'll see where that goes, but crazy.
Cool. Well,
agreed.
Any other quick hits on games? So we can move along. We're already at about an hour here. I'm going to throw down with, I just finally beat Candy Box. I know, took forever, but I finally beat that stupid game. I'm just started playing new Super Luigi U, which is hard. It is a,
but not in a good way.
Well, it's going to take a long time.
The only thing
to get
I've seen is it's hard because of the collection.
No, that's not it at all. Nope, it's hard for me because of the fucking controls for Luigi. He's as floaty as as Sackboy. And Sackboy had horrible platforming, I think, with just the floatiness of the characters. And I think Luigi, because Luigi has that floating, that long jump, floaty jump ability,
kicks
the same way.
Yeah, he was more floaty, and that goes all the way back to like Super Mario Brothers 2. Like,
yeah,
that was part of him.
He kicks his legs. I don't think that, I don't know, I'm not quite digging yet. I'm only like 4 or 5 levels in, but I'm not quite digging it yet. So, and Steven and I played Rush Brothers.
We're not going to give that game. Don't buy it.
Don't buy it. Anyways,
I'm not give any stars.
It's going to be weird.
I give Rush Brothers a 0.
You give him a 0. I don't know if I'll give it a 0.
Did you play
the
completion?
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, there is no real completion. You just play the beats.
That's like saying, did you play Audio Surf to completion?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I'd say I did. I have like 500 gazillion hours in that game.
But it's the same concept of like a world that is populated by...
Okay, guys, ask me anything about Rush Brothers, because I can't answer any of those questions.
I mean, it's a very, very straight up... Dally's probably more equipped to explain it. I played literally 18 minutes with him before this podcast started.
So it's just a 2D platforming race game. Playing it multiplayer is really the only way to play it, because single player... It's just you trying to set your own time records for the level. Supposedly, each of these levels is synced up to the music, but the moment you do anything that's different than what the music requests or the level requests, just completely throws you off. There's no way that it could be resynced ever again. So, that's it. It's just not great visuals. It's like $10, which is it $10, something like that? Which is a lot of money to pay for this kind of game. You can import your own music, and it builds the world. It'll build levels dynamically based on the songs you put in. But again, has no you know, once the moment you miss something, the moment you miss a jump or something, it totally throws the sync off, and there's no reason to play it.
Couple things I will say. I won't get too deep into it because I've only played like 18 minutes of it. But A, I think the game looks like garbage. It's like a sort of Flash game style look to it, but the art, but just the general art style of the characters, like they're little, not stick figures, but like little chibi guys with no mouths and like circles for hands and stuff like that. It just doesn't look very good. Okay. And, but I will say in the game's defense that the default music that comes in the game is pretty
good. It's pretty good. Yeah, I like the default music. I could actually see myself listening to that while I'm working. So it's good, like, music that comes in the game, but beyond that...
But it's all a bunch of licensed music from other, from like real techno and electronica bands. So you can literally just go buy their albums. Yes. Yeah.
So I've operated under the impression for, I don't know, ever since I got the first PR email about this thing, that it was like some spiritual successor to the NES game Russian Attack.
Oh, no. that would have been kind of cool, though.
They made Yar's Revenge, didn't they? They already made a successor to Russian Attack.
What? Yar's Revenge is Yar's Revenge.
Oh, yeah, didn't they? Wasn't there?
There was Yar's, like a
Yar's Revenge is just Attack, like man. A... Goddamn, it was a remake of Yar's Revenge.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought there was a Russian Attack remake.
I don't know, maybe.
The last couple years.
Probably.
Shit, man. I don't know.
I thought that was somehow connected to that, but no, it has nothing to do with that, as far as I know.
I know Russian Attack shooting RPGs and throwing hand grenades. That's all I know about Russian Attack.
That's all you know, period. That's all you know.
Because I haven't played it in, like, 15 years.
If little do people know, that's Eric is actually FPS Syracuse. FPS.
Yes.
Syracuse. Steven, what else have you been playing?
I won't go into my list of games that I've played unless Eric wants to talk about Star Trek Online later.
Talk the one that you want to talk about.
So actually, now that I think about it, two I want to talk about, but I'm going to talk about the one that's more important, which is, well, okay, more important is not correct, but... probably the one that has been talked about the least, which is Mars Warlogs.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like you don't really want to talk about that game, though.
Not really. I reviewed it again. You can go rate it. I gave it a 2 out of 5.
It is RPG.
It is an RPG that desperately wants to be The Witcher, but in space. On Mars.
Space Witcher sounds like a great idea to me.
And you know what? In a lot of ways, that is a very successful formula. It is, you know, aesthetically, the game is really interesting. Thematically, it touches on some interesting stuff, but in every other way, potentially, the game fails and just falls flat on its face. The characters are dull. The voice acting is hilarious. It is some of the most quotable stuff I've ever seen, to the point where I wrote down some of the lines while I was reviewing it in my review notes so that I could read them for you, the listeners, here on the podcast. Lines such as, "And just what did you find? Your asshole?" which is one of my... which is probably going to return during Game of the Year discussion.
Of course, imagine.
And then... there was a third one near the beginning that I can't remember, but the second one, which is the only one, other one I've got written down here, is, "Shit, why not just call me a fucking pussy?" which when it's delivered by actors who are clearly not speaking...
Is this like a Leisure Suit Larry game?
Speaking of which, the Leisure Suit Larry remake did come out, and it's pretty good.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
But, speaking of Leisure Suit Larry... That is more germane to the topic than you would think, because this game is incredibly, incredibly misogynist. I'm not saying Leisure Suit Larry is, you know, Leisure Suit Larry is like self-aware enough, but this game, not so much. The first Leisure Suit Larry is self-aware. But this one is, okay, so I mentioned it in the review as well, but in the game, the first female character, so it starts at a prison, so it's all dudes except for one female character who's like the warden's lover, a character named Mary. Mary is like a space wizard, essentially. They're called technomancers, and
Wow, that's a dumb name.
Yep, it's the worst fucking name. Even in the review, I couldn't bring myself to say that word like unadorned. So I had to like literally point out that that is the worst fucking name. I was just like, ugh, this is so bad.
Is that something William Shatner came up with?
Yeah, it's Tech War, Technomancers, is actually the full name of Mars Warlock. yeah, that's a Tech War goof, kids. So Mary, she's a Technomancer, and at the end of the sort of first chapter of the game, you kill her master, which is this guy named Sean, who she literally refers to as Master. She then follows you in order to kill you, to get revenge on you. She follows you into this Martian city, and then shows up about halfway through the second chapter, and you find her because you hear you hear this massive explosion, and the main character that you play as is also a Technomancer, so he knows that explosion had to be caused by a Technomancer, so he runs up and investigates, and there she is, and she has blown herself up with her Technomancer powers, but it has not seemed to have physically altered her appearance in any way. She doesn't have any cuts or anything. But her dress, she wears like a blue dress at the beginning of the game, has been completely blown to ribbons in just like these sort of strings that just kind of cling to her body. And you can kind of see her underwear through them. And then throughout the rest of the game, that is what she wears. Because according to...
They're calling her Khaleesi too.
Yeah. It's just these like sort of tattered strings. And then when you ask her why she keeps wearing that, she says, because it reminds her of her past. So, of course, it's all good. It's all perfectly okay now. That's what she's running around in. But after you find her, she has come there to kill you, immediately decides she doesn't want to kill you without any kind of sort of explanation on your part as to why you did what you did and killed her master. She reveals that she was having sex with her master, and then... And then three, like literally the third sentence she says to you in this game is basically her offering to have sex with you. And you have a dialogue option that allows you to either have sex with her or not have sex with her. So just immediately you can start banging the first female character in the game.
Come on, it's real life.
So the second female character in the game is an ex-prostitute.
Good decision all around.
Mm. Yeah. The third female character you meet is a date rape murder victim.
What?
Wait,
how can you be a murder victim and be in a game? Is she a ghost?
You find her corpse, and she has been the victim of date rape. They have a sci-fi date rape.
Oh, okay. You made it sound like she was a character. I'm like, what are you even saying? This is a fear game.
It just gets worse and worse from there, and it eventually culminates in, it's kind of goofy to say it out loud now, but in the game it is incredibly disgusting, and finally ends with and this is something that I figured I should bring up very specifically, because there's this character who you meet towards the end of the game he is part of a group that has been experimented on by the main bad guys, the Technomancers. And he gives this line where he explains what they've been doing to them. And I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically says that they have been stealing the women and sort of kidnapping them and forcing them to become brood sows for mutants. And it's just incredibly disgusting. And I can probably guess that it's meant to be shocking, but at the same time, when the rest of the game is what it is just like I felt dirty after playing this game and stuff like that. And the reason I feel like I should specifically bring that part up, besides the fact that it is incredibly, incredibly gross, is that I went and watched the trailer to the game after I beat the game. I went and watched the promotional trailer because it has a great song, which never appears in the actual game, by the way. But it has this awesome song, and I wanted to know what it was. But then I realized that guy's line is actually spoken during the trailer for this game, the promo trailer, but they have cut out the part about the women being kidnapped and forced into forced pregnancies. He still says everything else. They just cut out that part, and it's just super weird. The game is full of stuff like that. It's super gross, and it's a shame because some of the you know, if the polish was a little bit higher and the production values were greater, a lot of this other stuff in the game is like really, really cool and interesting. The combat is interesting. The aesthetic is interesting. Mars is a really underutilized setting, but it is so gross. Like everything about it is so gross. So yeah, that's my tirade. That's my rant about Mars Warlogs. I kind of want there to be a sequel because they kind of play on so many of these great ideas, but like they need to, and it's like The Witcher. Like The Witcher, the first Witcher had a lot of really gross misogyny stuff in it too, but the sequel and the sequel still definitely had nudity and stuff like that, but they did away with a lot of what was gross about the Witcher 2, or The Witcher in The Witcher 2, and made it very much more interesting game in a lot of ways, and that was just one of the many ways that it improved. And if they could improve on this in those same ways, like I could definitely see this making a great Mars 2 being really good, but
sure.
As it is, it feels like this sort of hacked together Eastern European thing.
And... Well, they're making Bound by Flame, which is it's not that it's Mars Warlogs, but it's set kind of with the same gameplay mechanic, but in a more traditional fantasy setting. I got to take a look at that at E3 this year, and
it that seemed... is Spiders who's developing that.
Yeah, Spiders Games, I think it's the name of the company, or Spiders. But
Spiders!
It is an RPG-ass RPG, in my opinion. I mean, there's nothing really, the fantasy version, nothing really special that sticks out. I'm hoping that Mars Warlogs sells enough.
That name is dumb.
Yeah. That's a terrible name.
I think it needs a sequel that they actually spent some time crafting well.
Yeah, like, and the other thing that's maybe worth mentioning about the game is that, it is only $20. It is $19.99 on Steam, so they're not asking a premium for this game. They are kind of aware, perhaps, of some of the failings of the game in terms of just like overall production value. It's just,
well, they couldn't charge much more for it.
Yeah,
like that is
they certainly shouldn't.
About average price for games of that ilk on Steam.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, It is very ambitious, and I could definitely see a universe where they charged $40 or $50 for this game.
Yeah, and then it sold like 30 copies instead of 40.
Yeah, right. But I can definitely see them doing that is the thing. It would have maybe been a bad decision, but with as ambitious as the game is, I could have definitely seen them saying like, well, this is worth, you know, this can hang with the big kids. And it's kind of telling that like my biggest problem with the game is ideologically and not in terms of gameplay, because the gameplay is very unpolished. The game is pretty ugly, but there are so many good ideas. Like the combat is all based around like this very crowd control-y kind of stuff. Mm. And the way you gain money in the game is by like, you never actually kill anybody in the game unless you want to. So when you beat them up with like sticks and rods and stuff, because all the technology on Mars sucks, which is neat, from an aesthetic viewpoint, but it also means that since the characters never actually die, they just get their asses kicked Batman style. You can actually go up to their corpses and drain the water out of their bodies. And then that's the currency in the game, is like the drained water, but it affects your reputation. So you
Aquaman them?
You do. Well, that you see my point of reference for that is Dune, like, you know, the Fremen stealing water, but yeah, exactly. You drain the liquid from their bodies, and then but you use it as money. I think
so they call it serum. Dust the dude.
Yeah, literally.
So it is Aquaman.
Yeah, it's like the 1960 Batman movie when the Joker dehydrates the United Nations. It's a lot like that. They all turn into piles of dust with little funny hats on top of them.
Dust.
Mars. This happens in Mars.
But yeah, and then Mars. The only other. I have one last thing to talk about, which I will just breeze through three sentences. Online Miami is on PS Vita and PS3 now. It is an amazing port, and on Vita, the targeting and peaking is controlled with the touch controls, which actually works a lot better than the middle mouse button. Mm. And you can also
I used a controller.
Oh, did you?
On the PC, yeah.
Oh.
See that for a lot of people on PC, there was a controller bug that actually made
the game crash. There totally was for like the first like week or so. And they patched it and it worked fine.
You see, I played the game immediately when it came out, so I used mouse and keyboard. Just
I played it immediately too, but I just
never got hit with the bug. Like,
yeah, well, I didn't really care enough to play it all the way through right away.
Oh, okay.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. That game was fun, but not for the entire game.
So it gets
decidedly less fun the more gun combat there is.
I can probably agree with that. Towards the end of that game, there is definitely a dip where there's a lot of gun combat, especially at the police station. Like that, the police station is like, all about it's, that.
When you're like respawning and respawning, trying to fight like the three guys with guns, a guy with a Molotov, and the big black guy who just sprints at you.
Oh yeah, when they crash the car into the front of the building. Okay.
Yeah, like I probably played that section 35 different times, and it was fun the first time, and then I died, and then I was uninterested in it.
So when I first played the game on PC, there were like maybe 5 or 6 moments like that, with those sort of set piece moments where it's just like I died like 50 times, and it does that Super Meat Boy thing of just instantly respawning you. It doesn't feel quite so bad because you don't have to wait through a load screen or anything.
Yeah.
And playing through it again on Vita, it was literally, I don't know if it was just because I knew now what to expect and how to play Hotline Miami better, but like those moments that took me 50 times before, I was literally getting through them in like 2 tries. Like that boss fight against Helmet, the guy with the helmet, on the motorcycle, literally finished it in 2 tries. I only died once. Moments like that, I breezed through this game on Vita, and they do another thing too. And I don't know if this is in the PC version. I'm sure if it was on controller, I'll bet it was. But if you hit square on the PS4 or PS3 controller or the Vita controller, you will just auto target the nearest enemy.
I think it was like LB or RB or something.
Okay, yeah, that would make sense. But I never knew that there was like a target closest character. I didn't even know it playing through the game on Vita. It wasn't until Mike Williams told me on Twitter.
Yeah, I didn't really use it on PC because it was kind of awkward. It would like target through walls even when there's a guy like in the open.
Right.
That was a bummer.
And it's weird because it doesn't target literally the closest enemy to you. It targets the closest enemy to your crosshair, or the enemy closest to your crosshair.
Yeah.
And it is a weird system, but on Vita, where you literally have to target characters nearby with precision, you need to literally take a hand off of the controller. If you just want to, if you just have 2 enemies nearby each other and you just want a really quick snap between the 2 of them, you can use that and it works really well. But the touch controls work really well, and the game runs perfectly smooth. It looks great on the Vita and on a big giant TV with your on the PS3 and everything. So it's a great port. And it's probably the best version of that game.
Cool.
And it's $10 and features a full platinum, which is a trend that I, platinum trophy that is, and that is a trend I want to get behind.
Now may buy this game. I should mention that I have seen reports on Twitter of people having issues with the game working.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Not a ton, but at least 3 or 4 people saying, yo, this game is busted.
Okay. It's a one guy studio. It's a one man studio.
Yeah, I'm not like, it sucks that it's busted, but I mean, it's kind of expected when the PC version was.
It came out busted.
Yeah.
I never ran into any problems. It never crashed or froze or anything for me, but if that is a thing, then yeah, people should probably know about that. it's really good. Oh, and I guess
just buy it, because I mean, it's not like he's not going to update it.
Yeah, I mean, he updated the PC version.
And he did it like quickly too. There's like a dozen updates within the first week and a half.
Yeah, this guy, his name's like Taco or something, isn't it? Like,
I think it is
something like that. It's like Donkey or something. Like, he's just got like a one word sort of nonsense name that he goes by on online.
I didn't know it. I knew it up until you said Taco.
Well, you see, I said Taco, and then I realized, no, that's the footing on the Ritz guy. I guess he did also add a couple of other things to the PS3 Vita version, which is, I mean, obviously it's cross-buy, it has cloud saving that just syncs automatically between the 2. But it also has leaderboards now, which I don't know if the PC version shipped with leaderboards? They might have added them.
I don't recall them, and I played it like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Okay, well, this one has leaderboards.
Maybe a month.
And it also...
What gets leaderboarded?
Your score at the end of every level.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I completely forgot you get scored.
Yep. So that's all on leaderboards. And they added two new things, well, quote-unquote new. One is that there's a new mask. If you don't know Hotline Miami, you wear masks and they give you different powers. But this one, all it does is I think it's the last one you unlock, and all it does is change the entire game to look like the movie Raging Bull. And the description of the power is literally just Raging Bull. So that's pretty good. You know, it's black and white with red blood. And they added a level that was previously only available if you pre-ordered from a specific retailer, like Get Games or something, which is a level based on the, I think it's the Eurogamer Expo. It is a digital recreation of the Eurogamer Expo show floor, but filled with enemies that you kill.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it literally, and it's not like a kind of hacked together like a off-brand version of it either. It literally says Eurogamer on the floor throughout the facility. And I feel like I'm missing one thing, but I think that's all the important stuff. It's a great game.
That was a long, really quick update.
I know. There was more to talk about than I thought. I forgot about that it had a bunch of extra stuff. So.
Man, I don't remember. I'm trying to remember what mask I used most of the time in that game.
I remember kind of switching a lot. I remember using the one that allowed you to...
What was the horse mask? What did that do?
Isn't the horse one the one that automatically makes door opening kill people?
Kill people, yes. That's the one I use all the time because that's the best skill to have.
Yeah, there's some... Eventually, at least in this new version, I know I switched over eventually to using the one mask that allows you to kill enemies with a thrown item. So if you throw something at an enemy, they just instantly die.
I did use that one too, but I never really cared because I'd grab a rifle and throw it at them and then beat the crap out of them. Cactus, by the way.
Cactus, okay. That's a great name.
Taco.
Oh, man. Well, they're both, you know, southwestern kind of things, I guess. Taco and cactus, you know, New Mexico, Arizona. Man, that music is so good. It's still so good. That soundtrack is still so good. Go listen to the Hotline Miami soundtrack immediately if you haven't already, or buy the game and just like let the menu run on repeat.
Yeah, you can totally rip all the audio files out of the game.
Yeah, you can debase
yourself by dealing with AUG. As long as you feel like going to a website that can convert AUG to MP3.
Yeah, as long as you hate yourself. As long as you defile yourself by touching an AUG Vorbis file.
Gotta love touching AUG. Well, yeah. Gentlemen, it's been an hour and a half, and
of course it has.
Yep, as usual. our 40-minute show has always been an hour and
just
a half.
Just cut out everything before I got in here.
No, we had some good discussion before you got here, actually.
You guys had good discussion afterwards on games that you guys actually played that I didn't. So
I'm so glad we got to talk about the Swapper finally, Eric.
Yes, out loud.
Yeah. Not in the hushed whispers of a Twitter DM.
Yeah, a Twitter BM.
Oh,
no. On that note,
I wasn't making jokes about hiding in an attic, but okay.
Happy birthday, America, which is, I'm sure,
happy birthday, Canada.
The reason for the season. Yeah, happy birthday,
like
happy
birthday today,
little brother.
Literally is Canada.
Today is Canada Day.
Today is Canada Day.
You hosers.
Today is Canada Today.
Celebrate by watching Strange Brew, like a true American.
Well, I'm going to go over the stupid notes of stupid. This week's stupid notes of stupid were The Triple, Ball of Depression, Chronosexuals, Danica Patrick, The World's Fastest Embryo, Our Fan, Rickett, Beer Dazzle, 3 inches South of the Nose, and Today is Canada Today. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the side quest. I am Dolly Domofsky. You can find me at Coolerats. You can find Steven...
You can find me on Twitter at Steven Strom, StevenStrom.
You can find Eric.
You can find me at LMM, E. I don't even know how you spell it. You can find me at Elm. I'm two L's and I'm at the end.
And you can find us at SideQuesting on Twitter and SideQuesting.com. Please rate and review us. Send us an email because we'll read them. And maybe we even mention them on the air. We've actually had a lot of good spam emails pop in lately. I'll have to just devote a section to our
wonderful
spam. We
should totally read those. We got to read everything. From now on, we read everything that comes into that mailbox.
Next episode, we're going to read every email that comes in between now and then. You can email us podcast@sidequesting.com. podcast@sidequesting.com. On that note, fellas and world, we'll see you guys on the next Side Quest.
Bye.
Bye.
Disempowered, the scattering flock dances.